You don't need special gadgets to be a hero. With unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere, the Capital One Quicksilver Card makes you the hero of every purchase. Whether it's headphones, a lounge chair, or even a well-deserved massage, whatever the Quicksilver purchase, you're the hero. No fighting bad guys, getting in epic car chases, or parachuting out of buildings required. Simple, isn't it? The Capital One Quicksilver Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. And this is Stuff You Should Know, the podcast.
And it's Election Day. We didn't mention that before.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's Election Day. Not sure when this is going to come out.
I can tell you exactly when it's going to come out.
Oh, do we know about this one?
Well, it'll come out either the 27th or the 29th.
No. Of November?
Yeah.
Oh, great. What a great time to talk about peak oil.
Yeah.
The holiday season.
Everybody's still digesting Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
It's a little chilly out. It's what everyone's thinking about right now.
Yeah,
football and
sports and stuff like that, and fall colors. Let's talk about oil.
Instead, when will the world's oil production be outstripped by demand?
That's right.
Irrevocably.
That's right.
That's what peak oil is. That's what we're talking about.
Before we get started, I need to just clear something up. Peak oil is a definite thing. So where's the controversy? When it's going to happen?
When it's going to happen and exactly what will happen after it happens.
Okay, because reading this, I was a little confused. It seemed like some people were like denying that it was going to happen at all or something.
Yeah, no.
Like, we got to run out of oil at some point.
So if you talk to any peak oil adherent, there's definitely some that are a little more the sky is falling than others. And I think they probably represent the minority, especially now. But if you went back to like 2007, 2008 when I wrote this, remember Matt Baker?
Yes.
Matt Baker, who used to work here, he was a developer.
Yeah.
He got me into this.
Oh, really?
And he would go to like meetings.
Oh, yeah, Matt, sure.
Yeah. He would go to like meetings and like about the future without oil. And he was big time into it. And at that time, there were a lot of like very smart people talking very loudly.
Yeah.
Saying like, dudes, we may have already hit peak oil and we need to start doing something about it or else like we're in really big trouble.
Right.
Those voices have quieted down quite a bit due to some developments in the last couple of years. This is almost kind of like a throwback.
Crude going down in prices.
There's a lot of stuff happening, but for the most part, there is agreement that we will one day hit peak oil. And the definition of peak oil is not when we run out of oil,
right?
But when our oil production, right, like removing it from the ground. It can no longer keep up with demand.
Yeah.
The whole reason that this will probably happen is because oil is a very finite resource, right?
Yes, and we are not treating it as such.
No.
So those two things combined mean that we're going to run out at some point.
But even if we did treat it, like even if we did conserve our oil,
yeah, it's still finite.
But we didn't bring any other type of energy into it.
Yeah.
It's a finite resource. Like it takes 10 million years
for...
These fossil fuels at least to be produced to turn into crude oil. The reason we have so much of it is because there was a massive die out of large dinosaurs.
Now, see, I read that the dinosaurs had very little to do with it and that it was like other living creatures.
Well, you tell me who said that.
I don't know. I'd have to go look it up. Some guy a lot smarter than me.
Okay. So,
but regardless.
The dinosaurs may or may not have had something to do with it, but things that lived at least 10 million years ago and whose corpses were subject to these specific geological processes to form oil. and there's only a very limited amount of it. It is the definition of a non-renewable resource.
Yeah, petroleum.
We're going to run out of it eventually.
Yep.
But like you were asking, like when that happens,
yeah,
and what happens when we reach that point, that's what the debate over peak oil is. Because some people think we may never hit peak oil.
Right.
We may come up with great alternative energy.
Yeah. Fill in the gaps, as it were.
Right. And like maybe we'll just leave oil behind.
Yeah.
We'll never go back and like use up the whole world supply because something else will come along, or we'll master wind technology and we'll be fine. But for the most part, people agree that we will hit this point of peak oil, which again isn't running out of oil. It's where production plateaus and starts to decline while demand keeps increasing.
Yes, I think
you have a big problem there.
If people don't get that by now.
Well, no, if you
after
if
the
you,
third time.
If you talk to I can tell you that people who are peak oil adherents,
yeah,
are very, very satisfied with us right now because we pointed that out three times. Because
yeah.
It's a big, big misconception.
Wait, is that him now? He's coming in here to give us a pat on the back.
Right, yeah.
I guess, who could that be? King Hibbert? Hubbert? He's dead probably, huh?
I believe so.
All right, let's get into
this. I mean,
this.
He was working in the 50s. So I guess we laid out what we're talking about,
yeah.
Right? But it is all based on M. King Hubbert's Hubbert curve.
That's right. Do we need to talk about the BP report, or is that old news?
Well, they do that every year.
Oh, okay. So what does the recent one say? Do you know?
Well, this is one of the recent developments. So this BP statistical review of world energy,
mm-hmm.
BP compiles all of this energy information every year, and it's a huge, awesome PDF of like energy information.
Right.
And in 2008, they published that we have 1,238 billion barrels of oil improved reserves. That's 1.2 trillion barrels of oil improved reserves. Now, approved reserve doesn't mean that like you already have it in a barrel. It means that some seismologist has done a geological survey of an area and said, yeah, there's oil there, and it has a 90% chance of being easily extractable.
Okay.
And you probably have this many barrels in this reserve. That's a proven reserve.
Right.
There's also probably stuff that we haven't found out there yet.
Oh, sure.
That adds to the whole oil base. But BP said in 2008 that we have 1.2 trillion barrels of oil. In 2012, they said that we have 1.6 trillion. So we added 400 billion barrels of oil in 4 years.
Right.
That was a huge thing that quieted everybody down.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Could be a little hinky because, the people giving up this information, they get money and funding based on things like this.
Yeah. If you're a member of OPEC
and they're not checking their work, as it were either. So what you have is, you're not being audited. And if you lie about your numbers, you might get more funding. So a lot of people say, wait a minute, we shouldn't trust reports like this.
Right. There's for every bit of information or data, there's basically two ways to look at it. It's
yeah.
either truthful or here's all the reasons why it's probably not truthful.
I know. This is one of those things. It's just the point counterpoint just goes on and on and on.
Yeah. And the reason why is because we have no idea how much oil is left on
yeah.
Earth. Like we can't say. And like the people who supposedly do know have reason to not be truthful about it.
Right.
Or to exaggerate it even.
Sure.
So the BP statistical review is very, very widely respected. It's also criticized for that reason that you just said. But the whole idea behind this is based on what the guy who we were talking about, M. King Hubbert, came up with in the 1950s, which is called the Hubbert curve, right?
Yeah, and this just makes sense to me. I don't know why it took this guy to come up with this. But it basically says, you know what? Oil reserves are going to follow a trajectory.
Right.
You're going to tap it, and you're going to pump oil out, and after that, production is going to plateau, and then it's going to decline.
Yeah.
It took some smart guy to figure that out.
Yeah, and I feel where you're coming from,
you know?
And I think the same thing, but I think like there's a specific like this guy really graphed it out.
Sure.
And could predict like within maybe a year or something like that, which he did. The reason why everybody listens to Hubbert was because he predicted that the U.S. would hit its own peak production in sometime between 1965 and 70. Well, we missed it by a year. The U.S. oil production peaked in 1971,
yeah,
and it's been declining ever since. And this guy's made other great predictions, but the point is his Hubbert curve for any oil reserve, if you look at all of the reserves on Earth as one large reserve, mm-hmm, then the Earth's oil supply should follow the same predictable curve.
Right.
And eventually, when you hit this plateau and production starts to decline, it's inevitable, right?
That's right.
It makes sense to you. It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So where's the problem?
In 2007, the Government Accountability Office published, mm-hmm, another study,
right,
that said, all right, we need to, you know, guard ourselves against this potential fallout from the peak oil problem.
Right.
And so there's a lot of factors here. You liken it to a marathon?
This is a terrible analogy.
I would say a relay race. That's where you messed up.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because then you've got different team members doing better or worse.
Oh, yeah.
And contributing or detracting.
I walked right by that. Man, I walked right by that.
So let's look at it as a relay race.
Okay.
And each of the runners in your relay race is going to represent oil consumption, production, or alternative fuels. So as alternative fuels get more advanced, then you're going to be using less oil. So that's, mm-hmm, great.
Right.
We're trying to make moves to just consume less.
Right. Or conserve.
Yeah, and conserving via, I know Obama's put in place a lot of stringent rules for car manufacturers these days.
Yeah, the CAFE standards.
Yeah, so.
In August, he signed in something in the law that doubles the CAFE standards to 54.5 miles per gallon by 2025.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that will have a huge impact on oil consumption.
So if you're in your little relay race still, that means oil is stabilized a little more because you're just not using.
You're decreasing supply, which is taxing demand, or you're decreasing demand, which is taxing supply less.
Yes. But then other bad things can happen. One of the little relay racers might get hung up by the fact that China and India are, mm-hmm, growing in many ways and need some of that oil.
Yep.
And so all of a sudden you're going to be using more oil. And it's just a sort of a give and take, a little seesaw effect until, I guess, you get a plateau? That's just the changes the formula.
I think part of the analogy that I got wrong, too, was like I was making all these racers like racing toward the peak oil line as the finish line. Humanity's like on its way toward that. But how fast we get there, it depends on these things.
Okay, sure.
So it's almost like they're marbles or jacks or stuff for us to trip. They're banana peels. These are different kinds of banana peels.
Okay.
Some are more slippery than others.
Very good then. One thing is for sure is that here in the United States, we use a lot of oil for transportation. That's the primary use. What's the percentage now?
70% of all oil
70?
Goes to transportation.
In the U.S.?
Yeah.
Or is that worldwide?
In the U.S., sorry.
And as of now, we are getting – the good news is we're at a 20-year low for foreign oil imports. We're at 42%.
Right. That's a very glib percentage. Like when it gets to energy, you really have to pay attention to how a statistic is worded. Because there's a lot of different factors involved. There's a lot of different ways of looking at it. And that's a really good example of it. 70% of all of our petroleum goes to transportation. That's a mind-boggling figure. But what we're really talking about is not oil consumption or energy consumption. We're talking about where that oil goes to. And actually, our consumption of oil in the U.S. has declined in the last few years. So while we're still using 70% of all that oil for transportation, we're actually using less oil overall.
What about the imports, though? Was that what you were talking about?
Well, the imports have actually declined as well.
No. That's what I just said. But you said that's the stat that you have to be really wary of.
Well, you have to be wary of all energy stats. But no, like there are some that are just kind of broad and above boards. And one of them is how much we're using, how much we're importing.
Right.
And we're importing more, but we're using less. So we're importing something like 60% of all the petroleum we used. In 2011, we imported.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which is more than the 58% in 2007.
So it took a sharp decrease then because we're at 42% now as of August of 2012.
No way.
Yeah, it's a 20-year low for foreign oil imports.
Okay, all right. So currently we're using, as far as this in 2011, we used an average of 18,835,000 barrels per day, which is a very British way of saying 18.835 million barrels a day.
Yes.
A day.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of petrol, which is also very British.
Right. But we were importing less, and that's actually less than we were using before. And you say there's a sharp decline down to what?
Down to, we're at a 20-year low, supposedly, of foreign imports.
Of imports, not necessarily consumption.
Imports.
Okay, and why?
Well, a lot of reasons. I know that they found a lot more oil in America recently.
Yeah.
Apparently Texas, and I think one of the Dakotas.
And from what I understand, also, natural gas is stepping up in providing a lot more energy than it was before.
Good for you, natural gas.
Yeah, aside from the whole fracking problem.
Frack that.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball, and you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hey, everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.
So, Chuck, where are we at?
All right, I think we're at the problems, the other side of the coin. 2006, the Cambridge Energy Research Associates said, you know what, we've got lots of oil. Don't you worry about it. We've actually got 3.74 trillion barrels, three times as many as you guys said.
As the peak oil proponents.
Peak oil proponents, yeah, that's you guys.
Yeah.
And don't you worry about it. It's going to be an undulating plateau. It's not going to be this drop-off. And we got oil for decades and decades that we can fill in the gaps as things come along with other forms of energy. And the sky is not falling. Just shut up and watch Dancing with the Stars.
Right. And if you read that BP report, it says that we have enough proven reserves to last us uninterrupted for 54.5 years, 54.2 years.
Yeah.
Which is a very long time. That's a lot of oil. Peak oil people say, that's great, man. That's awesome. But we can't just sit back and say, well, we're just going to keep going like this for 54 years because we will shoot ourselves in the foot. The whole point of believing in peak oil is saying that we have to take steps now.
Yeah.
To make sure that when we hit that 54.2 year, we're fine. We're totally covered. But as you say, there are plenty of people out there like the CERA or CERA that says, you guys are crazy. Just settle down.
Yeah. The reason they say things like this is because there's a lot of oil out there that we haven't even touched in the Arctic, for example.
Yeah.
Maybe 118 billion barrels of oil. And we know it's out there. This is not a theory.
No, they discovered it in the 50s.
Yeah, it's we know it's out there. It's just really expensive to go get because it's in the Arctic.
Yeah, it costs a lot of lobbying money to get into the Arctic to drill.
Under the ocean. Lots of oil down there.
It's just very deep.
We're just waiting. And we got this oil shell all over Canada. Canada's basically like one big oil shale.
And the western U.S. too.
Yeah, so don't worry, people. We've got all these super fields that we haven't even discovered yet. There's tons of oil. Don't worry about it.
So, Chuck, the reason why we have all this oil, but it's just sitting there, is mainly because it's expensive to get it under these conditions.
Yeah.
We still have plenty of oil that's easily gotten, right? And usually the way we get oil is in a three-stage process.
Yeah.
And most companies are only up to stage two.
Yeah, so it's really a two-stage process. Does anyone even go to the third stage?
Not yet.
Except
besides more like
Boston?
In the future.
Sorry.
That's like that when oil prices rise so high that 90% of your paycheck goes to buy gas.
That's when they can afford.
Yeah.
Because when you're paying $20 a gallon for gas, then they can afford to go down to the Arctic.
Exactly. There's an economic incentive. So normally when you get oil, stage one is where you like tap the reservoir, and oil pretty much just bubbles up out of the ground. You get about 10% of that reservoir from that first stage. Second one, you have to exert a little bit of effort. You pump some CO2 or some water into there, and you recharge it, and it starts to come up. You get anywhere from like another 20 to 40%.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the, if you watch like There Will Be Blood,
yeah,
I think those early oil guys, those were the dudes. I mean, they're the dudes that are now, you know, the 1%. Like, I don't even think they were probably going secondary. They were just going around from oil, you know, tapping that top 10% cheaply and just moving on.
Right. But.
But now they move on after the second stage.
Yes. Now, after the second stage, after you've taken anywhere from, 30 to 50%.
Yeah.
Which means there's 50 to 70% of that reservoir still left. You cap it and say, well, let's mark this spot and move on.
Yeah. Pee on it.
Right.
Put your little flag down.
Well, no. You want to use like some sort of phosphorescent or fluorescent like crayon to mark it. And you can come back with a black light and be like, oh, here it is. X marks the spot.
So they cap it again because of expense, because to go down and get that final 50% is just too expensive right now.
Same with extracting oil from oil shale or tar sands or...
Yeah.
Getting into the Arctic or into the deep ocean. There's just not an economic incentive. But if you are a critic of peak oil, you're going to say, we'll get to that when, like, we have all that extra stuff out there.
Let's right.
Calm down.
Yeah.
Right?
It is kind of good to know in a way. You know, it's not, I mean, I guess it's probably good that it's expensive because it would be very human-like to just suck those things as dry as a bone and then move on.
And there, my friend, you just tapped into the central theme of peak oil.
I did.
It is very human-like to just keep plodding along and suck something down to the bone and not look beyond that day when the bone is
dry.
Dry.
Yeah, you're right. It's sad. I've always wondered, too, if the Earth needed oil. And I looked it up on the internet, and I can't find anything. Remember?
Yeah.
We talked about this before.
I don't remember in what, but that was, yeah.
And I researched again a little bit last night. I was like, and I can't find any intelligent person on the internet that it's not just some message board saying, you know, oil is the blood of the earth and the planet, and if we suck it dry, like, why do you think we have earthquakes?
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. There's oil in earth. It could serve a function, right?
I would imagine.
Maybe.
I would think so.
Tectonically speaking?
I tend to think of things as a whole.
Yeah.
Like that. Like the Earth has...
Maybe.
There's reasons for everything like that. Or even if there isn't a reason, it's been around so long that something's become dependent on it. So it's important to something else other than our cars.
Right. And it is a lubricator. And it is found within hard rock. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
So, Chuck, we talked about... how this article's kind of almost a throwback.
That's a lubricator,
snapshot,
by the way.
You totally did.
Instead of lubricant.
it's like a snapshot of like this kind of, I don't want to say hysteria because I think it's right, but there was a lot of stuff going on in like 2008 that were making these peak oil adherents, say, hey, we're right. Everybody pay attention.
Yeah.
And probably the thing that, verified their beliefs more than anything else came on July 11th, 2008, when oil reached an all-time high of $147 a barrel.
Yeah, that is expensive.
Right. And if you believe in peak oil, or if you are an adherent of the peak oil idea, this is like one of the four horsemen riding out of the sky.
Yeah.
But the thing was, they ended up being, they were duped like everybody else by the speculators.
Yeah.
Who had driven up prices. But they were saying, nope, this is a problem. This is part of what they call peak light.
Right.
Which they think we've hit. Peak light is basically where production starts to plateau.
Yeah.
And we don't realize that it's going to eventually decline, but we're in the plateau.
Right.
And there'll be like little highs and lows, and all of those are going to, each one reflects this smaller scale, longer time frame version of the actual peak of
right.
oil. But it's kind of, it's like the smaller version of it once we hit
yeah.
the peak. And they think that's where we are now.
Yeah.
And if you ask me, that peak sounds an awful lot like what Sierra was saying, the undulating plateau.
Yeah.
And peak light sound like they're virtually the same.
Maybe so.
Yeah, but they disagree on when we hit that.
Well, oil per barrel is lower now, thankfully.
That's the one big thing.
It's at, as far as this month goes, $86.37 per barrel.
We've added, since 2008, we've added almost half a trillion barrels of oil in proved reserves.
Right.
It's a big one.
So we're moving in a right direction in some ways.
Yeah.
Correct? Alternative fuels?
Alternative fuels are making up a lot bigger chunk. They make up for the first time, and here's a good example of another statistic you have to pay attention to. Alternative fuels, or renewables and nuke and hydro,
mm-hmm.
for the first time ever in world energy consumption, make up more of the energy being used than any single fossil fuel. For the first time ever, in 2011 this happened.
That's great.
Covering growth in consumption.
Right.
So there's a very big key factor. That means that everything past the year before,
mm-hmm.
that's the growth in consumption, right?
Yeah.
So it's covering 34% of that.
Right.
Not of all energy consumption. So it
right.
sounds like this huge, enormous number. And it's a good, heartening number.
Sure.
But it's not what you'd think. Like, you really have to pay attention when you're talking about
yeah.
energy consumption.
Yeah.
Or energy stats.
Very true, because stats can be very misleading in this realm.
Right. And so one of the big problems with peak oil is anytime you say, well, hey, we have stuff in the Arctic Reserve, so we're fine. There's a lot of other problems that come up in conjunction with it. Oil is very dirty, literally and metaphorically.
That's right. You could destroy an ecosystem very easily.
Very easily.
In the Arctic. Very precious, balanced ecosystem.
Okay, so let's just sink all of our money into all alternative energy.
It sounds like you're setting me up. Yeah, I would say that's a great move, but it can be promising on one hand. But things like switchgrass and cellulosic ethanol are very corrosive, and it's very expensive to retrofit gas pumps at a gas station and gas storage tanks.
It's like $100,000 a gas station.
Yeah, so it's not like there's some super easy answer.
Well, plus also, uh-huh. it's like you're taking investment money away from finding new oil fields.
Yeah, exactly.
Putting into alternative energy. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing until you realize that, well, wait a minute, we're globalized, so if you take away oil from China and India,
mm-hmm.
you're going to slow down this economic engine.
You've got to strike that balance.
Right. It's Homer with the goldfish and Mr. Pinchy, again, with the salt, you know?
That's right.
It's the same thing.
Coal, they can actually make liquid coal now that can power a vehicle, which is great.
With no alterations.
Yeah.
You can pump it right into your car.
The bad thing is, coal is really dirty, and you're going to be emitting 4 to 8% more greenhouse gases than gasoline even.
Yep.
So, again, no easy answer.
Well, the same goes for natural gas. Natural gas made up 25% of the energy provided in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
that was consumed was provided by natural gas last year. That's huge. It's more than coal.
Yeah.
Came out of nowhere, right? But the problem is you have fracking alongside of that. Like, to
exactly.
get it, you have to basically, like, create an environmental disaster every time.
Yeah.
So there's all these problems with mitigating it, but the worst thing you can do is nothing. This one report that's kind of like peak oil adherence Bible found. It's called the Hirsch Report.
Yeah, or AKA peaking of world oil production, impacts mitigation and risk management. And Robert Hirsch.
You can understand why they call it the Hirsch Report.
Yeah. Robert Hirsch put this together and basically laid out three scenarios. It's do nothing, start 10 years ahead of time to help out this problem,
right,
or start 20 years ahead of time.
Yeah.
To really head off this problem.
And to head off these mitigations, it's figuring out alternative fuels, decreasing demand, basically like just doing whatever you can to take the pressure off of production.
Yeah.
So that we still have oil, we're just using less of it.
Yeah. And unsurprisingly, he says 20 years before would be the best way to handle this.
Yeah.
10 years before. If you did that, he said it could be a pretty smooth transition.
Right.
If you start 10 years before, then you're going to have a problem for about a decade, a shortfall. And if you don't do anything, then you're going to have at least a 20-year shortfall.
And so what we're talking about
globally,
when there's like, yes, a global energy shortfall.
Yeah, that's scary times right there.
Yeah, because oil, petroleum, crude oil and petroleum are found in our medicine, our foods. They are used by the tanker trucks and ships that deliver petroleum.
Yeah.
Use petroleum to deliver it. It's everything to everybody. It's the lifeblood of the global economic engine. And, dude, like, we've never experienced anything like the catastrophic collapse that would happen if we experienced a 10-year global energy shortfall.
I got two words for you. Mad Max.
Yeah. I don't see an end to that. Like, if we experienced 10 years or 20 years, I don't see how we would ever come out of that.
Yeah. I mean, because it's easy to say, well, get on your bicycle. But like you said, it's not just, hey, I put gas in my car to go to work. It is everything. Like, all of a sudden, I can't get food delivered to the grocery store or medicines. And, it's a pretty scary thought.
And the big part of the biggest problem is, like, we won't know when we hit peak oil until a few years afterwards when all these telltale signs start coming. And I'm sure most people won't agree. So it'll probably be several years afterwards when it's just painfully obvious that, production is being outstripped by demand.
Yeah.
Supply can't keep up with demand anymore, and it looks like it's never going to go back up, which means we've hit peak oil, which means we're in trouble. What mitigation measures do we have in place?
Yeah, one thing you don't want to hear someone say is, oops.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially when you're talking about the global economic engine.
Yeah, and I think you said some people claim that it might have already happened in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Others say, no, you know what? We're good till what, 2030?
2030 is when we hit that undulating plateau,
okay,
which should be not a problem
right,
as far as SEER is concerned.
But even 2040 is what you said, the most conservative peak oil. I was about to say enthusiast, but adherence is, I guess,
hobbyist,
the right word. That's the latest they think it's going to happen?
As far as when I wrote this in 2008. Now, a bunch of stuff have happened. Remember, we added almost half a trillion barrels of oil. We're using less. Our CAFE standards were increased recently. The 3.4% of all new car registrations in the U.S. in 2012 so far, were hybrid or electric, which is up from 1% just a few years ago.
But it's such a drop.
It is, but all of those drops count
in
like just kind of prolonging this point till we get to peak oil. Alternative energy investments are up. It's like we're doing all this great stuff. And as a result, all of the people, all these really loud voices that had like a real stage in 2008 and had the ears of a lot of people who were governing at the time, the climate has changed. And I wonder if like it was because of a lot of these peak oil adherents shouting really loud that we have made some concessions. But now I wonder if we're just going to become complacent.
Right.
Like, oh, well, we staved it off. We're fine for now. And we're just going to kick it on down the road, because I don't see a lot of effort going into it.
I mean, not there's some, but certainly not what is needed. I just feel like we're all headed toward the cataclysmic like collapse of humanity. Eventually, we're all going to turn on each other and ruin ourselves, and the earth will be scorched and empty.
Nice.
May not be anytime soon. Hundreds and hundreds of years from now. Who knows? But anyone that thinks that humans on planet Earth are, we're going to be around infinitely forever. because we're humans. It's just, you know, they're fooling themselves. It's fool's gold.
Nice.
How's that for happy?
That is perfect, Chuck.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball, and you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture, shall we? You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing? It's a lifestyle that might not be for you.
That's right, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle.
How? Good question. Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends, all before you head out the door. Your money is a workaholic.
But you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. So visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
If you want to learn more about peak oil, you can type those words into the search bar at howstuffworks.com, and it'll bring up this article. And I said search bar, which means it's time for listener mail, Chuck.
I'm going to call this Where's the Orchestra? This is from Eric Steffens, and he is a double bass player, principal double bass player, in an orchestra near Cologne, Germany.
Oh, okay.
And he listened to the Ben Soli Show about music and emotion, which we got great feedback on. And he says, many thanks to Ben, who played another fantastic and inspiring performance. He has a beautiful, open way of discussing music. Couldn't agree more. Many thanks to him for mentioning the importance of classical music. It's an art form that, unfortunately, too few people are exposed to now, having a lot to do with its financial and logistical complexities, but nonetheless one of the most powerful and underrated forms of music today. And it has contributed so much to how we in the Western world hear and perceive music today. I would really love it if you guys could get out and hear another performance sometime. Even more so if you encourage SYSK listeners to get out and experience and support their local orchestras. It is a difficult time for orchestras right now, and as Ben mentioned, many are being forced to downsize or fold altogether. This is one of the reasons why I've ended up in Germany, which still heavily supports many orchestras with state financing and media. The appreciation is very deeply rooted in the culture out here, and while it's a slightly different situation in the States, I want to remind people that classical music is not exclusive unless you make it so. And I would go on to even point out that he means orchestral music.
Mm-hmm.
It's classical is a period of time.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Way to correct him.
He probably doesn't appreciate that. It is not exclusive unless you make it so, so you don't need to have a tuxedo or a deep musical education to appreciate the extreme beauty and the importance of it. Couldn't agree more. Please give it a chance. Help keep it alive. And that is very good advice. Support your local orchestra. I guarantee you, whatever town you live in, unless you're in some really backward Kansas field town, you probably got an orchestra. Even if it's a smallish town, you might have an orchestra.
Yeah.
If you're in a big city, you definitely have an orchestra.
Yes.
Go out and see it. It's usually pretty cheap. It's not like paying for, you know, $60 to go see Jack White make noise.
Jeez.
I like Jack White, actually.
Oh, okay.
But he's charging too much.
$60 a head?
Yeah, when he played, he got that Rock and Tours band together.
Yeah.
Tickets were like $60 or $75.
That's a lot.
For one album of material.
That's a lot.
Anyway. Thank you for all the years of explaining the world through fantastic podcasts. I hope for many years to come to hear these. When I drink my delicious Kolsch beer tonight, I'll Prost, you guys.
Nice.
And he says, Schöne Grüße aus Cologne, Eric Steffens.
Thanks a lot, Steffens. Appreciate that.
Go out and see an orchestra.
I'm in favor of encouraging our listeners to go out and see an orchestra.
Yeah, here in Atlanta, we got a good one.
A specific day where all Stuff You Should Know listeners go out to the orchestra?
Well, I don't think you can count on all orchestras playing on that day in every town on the earth.
Well, let's find out about it. Let's find out.
All right, let's see if we can get that together.
I don't think we can make that happen, but maybe there's a day when orchestras typically play.
Sure.
Like, traditionally speaking.
Or how about, this winter season, make a commitment to go out? Because you're going to be darn sure that there'll be an orchestra playing some sort of Christmas classical concertos.
Oh, good.
You know?
Okay. All right, that's it. You have to go out and see an orchestra this winter.
Yeah, but don't go see the Nutcracker.
Nutcracker's not bad, depending on where you see it. I like it.
It's a little dull.
Really? You think so?
Oh, for me, sure.
There's, giant soldiers and a huge... There's a rat that hits people with the... There's a lot of stuff going on. Well, what do you like to go see? You see Christmas Carol?
No, I mean, I don't do any of that stuff. I go see Jack White and complain.
Yeah, I got you. let's see. If you have a favorite band you like to see that you think Chuck and I should see, or a performance of some sort, whether it's the Nutcracker or Jack White or whatever. Well, we've already covered those two, so you should probably leave them alone. We want to hear from you. You can tweet your suggestions to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. And you can send us a general email to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody, are you thirsty? Well, sip on pure, refreshing Richard's Rainwater. Yes, it's really rain, caught clean before it hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's Rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater or the long-lasting and cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. Sip the sky. The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.